The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
With my first letter that I'm going to bring to you this morning, which comes courtesy of somebody who went to visit, her name called Jane, who went to visit Glasnevin Cemetery for the first time quite recently. And therefore, her letter is addressed as follows to Dearest Daniel Charles Eamon, Michael, Patrick, Roger, Maud, Countess Markovich, and your many wider circle of friends spanning from the 19th to the 20th century. Sadly, writes Jane, this letter may only reach out to your souls, but with a little luck it may find a wider voice. A few days ago, I finally made time to sign up to a tour of Glasnevin Cemetery and reacquaint myself with your presence. I hoped the tour would be interesting and informative, but I didn't anticipate coming away with a tornado of feelings of empathy, from sadness and guilt to gratitude and immense pride. For 150 magical minutes, you became present. And what was amazing to me was hearing what relatively ordinary people you were prior to giving your lives for Ireland's freedom. Some of you were post clerks, students and lawyers. Others were farmers, artists and accountants. And you went about your daily activities, probably playing soccer in your youth, having a few beers in your local, doing a bit of weeding in your garden, or imagine even going for a stroll with your dog. I'm not a history buff, or an activist, or a feminist. I'm simply a 55-year-old daughter, sister, and aunt, also a swimmer, singer, radio lover, cyclist, and tennis enthusiast who adores this great, tiny, proud country of ours and the freedom in which I can live and roam. It may be late, and even if it's only to your souls, on behalf of all of us on this isle, I'm expressing my hearty gratitude for your bravery and courage and for the love and laughter that we are enjoying in abundance. Gurav Mahagwif, yours sincerely, Jane Han. Isn't that a great letter? I love that. Just a change of scene, because some of the letters, I'm going to read a section of letters coming up in a few minutes' time that are all addressed to dads, to the daddy, the da, the old fella, and they're all complicated, the relationships. And you know, whenever you listen to Sunday Miscellany, there's nearly always one story about daddy. Daddy didn't like eggs. It's intriguing. I always listen out for it. Play it. There it is. The dad letter. And sure enough, here we have a heap of them as part of our stories coming in from around the country and indeed the world. But I want to do another one that's addressed to somebody who isn't related to somebody, if you know what I'm trying to say. This is from Martin Fitzpatrick. Great letter. Loved it. And it says, Dear Mr. Louis Armstrong, forgive the formal introduction, but I'm aware of some dispute about the preferred pronunciation of your given name and whether you liked it or to stress the final S, or whether you liked it pronounced like those 18 kings of France. However, you have challenged so many conventions in your career that you are unlikely to be too fussy either way. Since I was a 16-year-old boy, I've always wanted to tell you about our lives, how our lives briefly intersected when you visited my hometown Dublin, Ireland, in 1957. Around that time, I discovered the life-changing power of jazz music. No one played it so sweetly, so softly, and with as much rhythm as you did. When I discovered you were headed for Dublin, I could think of little except your upcoming concert at the National Boxing Stadium. My father, whom I called the Da, was the treasurer and chief financial officer in our home. When I told him that I was looking for 10 shillings to go to your gig, he went ballistic. I didn't understand the full extent of his concern until recently when I consulted the internet and discovered that the 2019 purchasing power equivalent of those 10 shillings is 200 euro. Back then, however, I failed to appreciate the Da's careful balance sheet management, preferring to think of it as penny pinching. He was, after all, like you, a former bandsman, and I expected more of him. He had played clarinet in the Brass and Reed Band that performed in what is now Croke Park in November 1920, and that was the game that was shot up by the Black and Tans and 14 people were killed. The Da had suffered for his art just like you did. The week in the run-up to your concert was frantic as I puzzled out how I could get the 10 bob together. The solution, of course, was a grant, not a loan. The Da called me in for a serious face-to-face. I've been thinking about your New Orleans cornet player, and if it means that much to you, I'll find the 10 shillings, he said. My heart jumped 8 octaves. The next day, with the orange-coloured 10-shilling note hot in my hand, I trudged through the city only to discover the concert was a sellout and 5 10-shilling notes could not get me a seat. The clarinet player back home was almost as disappointed as I was, or so he claimed. But I was too much of a Louis Armstrong fan to let disappointment interfere with my passion. So I cycled to the National Stadium on the day of the concert, knowing that there was a strong sound leakage from the hall, which was designed for pugilism and not for acoustics. I sat outside on the crossbar of my bike and listened to every one of your glorious notes that I could catch. I thought too, maybe for the first time, about love, my soft-hearted clarinet player back home. And I agreed with you, Louis. It's a wonderful world. From your everlasting fan, Martin. Here's another letter from On Post Competition, addressed to a shop assistant of all things. Of all things, a human shop assistant. Dear shop assistant, it was just a little gee-up I needed that grey, wet day. Leaning my bike against your immaculately dressed window, I did wonder if I even needed to lock it. The saddle was certainly not worth covering with the plastic bag I carried in my pocket, as my business was unlikely to take more than 3 minutes. Walking through the swinging doors, I immediately realised I probably wasn't suitably attired to be in a premises like yours. I'd have been fine had I not chosen to come into town in a grubby raincoat and runners. Still, I was in the shop now, so I thought, best to press on. Designer handbags never turned my head, and silk scarves and the many makeup counters didn't hugely interest me either. As I approached your department, I noticed you were chatting to your colleague and away from your station. This was perfect, as I knew I didn't need any assistance or advice. To my delight, there was nobody standing at the counter. I had all four rows of small bottles entirely to myself. Leaning down, I quickly looked at the labels before picking up my favourite one, which read Basil and Pomegranate. Closing my eyes, I gave a discreet squirt to the area behind both ears, my neck, and for good measure, my two wrists. The fragrance instantly transported me to blue skies, Mediterranean seas, and balmy climes. It was just at that moment I heard your high heels approach. You were clearly keen to speak to me, and raising my hand, I assured you I didn't need any help, as I was just browsing. Standing there in your pencil skirt and makeup-free, pristine white collar, did you have to tell me that the scent I had just generally sprayed all over myself was, in fact, air freshener? Moira, good morning.
Hello, Ryan.
True story?
Sadly, based on fact and not fiction. And you know, when I heard you reading it there, I forgot for a second that the Egypt in that story is me.
I'm afraid so.
What can I say?
Yeah, well, you can tell us everything. For example, did you just go in for an old splash of perfume on the? Is that it?
Yeah, you see, I wasn't feeling great. I had just come out of the dentist, and I was feeling rotten, and my mouth was numb, and it was a wet day.
Yeah.
And at home, I suppose, I knew that I had left early in the morning after the kids had gone to school, and the kitchen was in an absolute state. Upstairs looked like it had been ransacked, and the laundry basket was completely out of control. And I thought, you know what? Wouldn't this be a lovely little treat? Just before I hop on my bike and go home, I'll have a quick little gee-up.
Quick bit of a freebie as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it was.
I mean, that's what they're there for, because...
Yeah, I wouldn't normally, Ryan, go in just for the freebie, to be honest. If I were passing the counter or if I saw it in duty-free, I might have a little spray, you know,
yes.
But I wouldn't really necessarily. It was just the day that was in it. I thought, yeah, this would be nice.
And the shop assistant to whom you addressed the letter, was she a pleasant person?
This is what kills me, really. She was utterly lovely.
Ah,
and
good.
Wasn't at all superior. Could have been very smug. I had absolutely no reason to take umbrage. She spoke softly when she delivered the blow. She could have bellowed it across the entire shop, but she didn't. And she treated me with utter respect, which really was beyond the call of duty.
And none of which you deserved in some respects.
Absolutely. I deserved none of it.
Having said that, according to your letter... you were transported, were you not, by the fragrance of the air freshener?
I mean, I was there for just those few seconds. Yeah. I had the sun on my skin, and I was on arid ground, and you know, it was Mediterranean. It was beautiful, and you know, the laundry basket was so far away from where I was standing just at that moment.
And then
I heard her, and I suppose I knew. I heard her heels before I opened my eyes.
Yeah.
Saw her approaching. She was just so utterly lovely and beautiful as well. The antithesis to me, really.
On that given day, obviously.
On that given day, yes.
Well, we loved your letter, so thank you very much for sharing, as we say. And
you're so welcome, Ron. I have enjoyed the letters over the last week so much. And, you know, it kind of makes you feel all is good with humanity when people can write so beautifully.
We're just bowled over by the letters, the honesty and the reaction, because people have these great stories in them.
Yeah, and they recall their memories. always in such a heartfelt way that they're very moving. And it's been a great week listening to other people's letters.
I'm delighted to hear that. To hear you say that. Happy Christmas to you and your family.
Happy Christmas to you too. Thanks so much.
Lovely to talk to you.
And to you. Bye
for now. It's 9:34. We'll have more for you after this. Tuesday morning. Let's go to our next letter. Keep going. This is from Linda. It says, to my multicultural work family. Just over a year ago, I walked into my new job as a catering assistant. Not knowing a single person on my first day filled me with nervous excitement. Within minutes, you all embraced me with an invisible hug and smiles of encouragement. Starting a new job at 50 years old overwhelmed me, but you all put me at ease in your own special way. It took me a number of days to wrap my Irish tongue around the pronunciation of some of your names. You know who you are. Gosha, gusha, gwocha. But it was much more than just your names. It was your kindness and willingness to take me under your wing and teach me about the running of the busy restaurant and the routine that we all had to endure in a long working day. And my friends, I want to thank you all for that. We had so much fun hiding behind doors or fridges, trying to avoid our supervisors, nibbling on ham and cheese toasties or delicious cream cakes. We were like the United Nations of the catering world. We celebrated so many special occasions together, such as engagements, new arrivals, retirements, Christmas and New Year, just like any normal family would. We had so many laugh-out-loud moments in work and outside work, and if I had to write them all in this letter, my pen would simply run out of ink. But you all know those moments, and that is what makes our friendship so very special. Love you all. In our time together, I've learned so much about your dreams and your cultures, and we became more than a team. We became family. So when I left so suddenly, it was heartbreaking. But with the miracle that is Messenger on Facebook, we stay in touch every day, where the fun continues. I am in another new job now, and the people are great, but they're not you. Melina, Monica, Lenka, Nicole, Damien, Jorge, Christopher, Mary, Catalina, Carmen, Teresa, Gosha, David, Jean, Karen, Chris, Simona, Leslie, Irvin, Mariana, Choma, Cormac, all the kitchen porters and staff and chefs. I miss you all. Onwards and upwards. Love, Linda. Good morning, Linda.
Good morning, Ryan.
I get the impression you obviously liked working there.
I absolutely adored working there. I just adored it, and I can't believe you read my letter to the nation.
I loved your letter that you ripped out some A4 pages. You got the pen out and you just got busy. You actually wrote 4 pages. I have them here in my hand. 4 pages. You took a lot of time to do that.
Yeah, I just needed to pour it out into words. It's like therapy. You don't understand. When I did it, it helped. It actually helped, and now it's helping even more today.
Help you do what?
To just survive, I suppose. I have such a big smile on my face, and I haven't had that in a long time. And I just want to say thanks so much.
Tell me what's been happening with you.
Life. Yes, it's just life and the rush of Christmas and... It's an anxiety and pressure and just life.
Well, let me ask you, because you're somebody we've never met, we've never spoken to before, but
I have actually.
Oh, you have? Sorry, I didn't know.
Less than a year ago, I actually rang in for a competition. It was a question competition. I was against another gentleman, and I won 2 tickets to Tommy Tiernan.
Ah, wonderful. Okay, I didn't know that. It was nice to talk to you again.
Yes, but, nice to talk to you.
But tell me this, because you're reflecting a lot of people stuck in traffic trying to get presents, nerves are gone. Tell me about the anxiety for a minute, will you? What has you anxious?
Oh, has me anxious. Well, leaving my job had me anxious, but I walked into another job because the jobs are out there. It's hard to explain anxiety. I've been suffering for about 10 years. Well, all of a sudden it just came back. It just pops its head up when you don't least expect it. You know, a lot of people suffer from anxiety, and it's really hard, and it's an invisible illness. It's not like a chest infection or a broken arm or a cut on your head. It's invisible. It's inside, and it's just hard to explain to people, doctors, family, colleagues, you know, and the colleagues that I had in my previous job understood. They actually understood. And I appreciate them for that, you know what I mean? But I had to do what I had to do for my health.
Okay, so you left that job, right?
Yes.
And you started a new one recently?
I started a new one recently.
How's it going?
It's okay. It's fine.
It's different.
I just needed to change the scenery, if you know what I mean.
I do, like, I understand.
I just had a little clash of personalities
okay.
in the last job.
That can happen too. And it's not easy. But you got out of that and into the new world order, and hopefully that's picking things up. Do you have family?
Yes.
Are you?
I do. I have family. I have lots of family. I have loads of loving family, and they all understand, and
they're on your side?
Yes. Good. Thank you very much.
No,
they're on my side to make a change. A change is better than what's it? Arrest, is that what I say?
Yeah, whatever gets you through. You know, you don't have to rely on old expressions or tropes. Just what works for you. And like, I found your letter. What jumped out of it was a naturally very happy person.
I am naturally very happy, but my hormones are not happy. I think it might be age. I'm 50.
Yeah, but I was saying earlier on, I'm heading towards that direction, and you become a bit more emotionally engaged, and I think things hit you a little more. And if it's a sad thing, it's sadder, and if it's funny, it's funnier. And this is probably not a bad thing, because then you understand people a little more.
Yeah, but I really the letter was, it wasn't about me. It was about the people that I have been with morning, noon, and night for the last year and a half, and you read out all the names, and you got all the names correct. And
just about it.
Brilliant. And I can't wait to tell them that their name was mentioned on the radio.
Get on the messenger now and let them know.
I cannot
believe
it.
Very good people. Hey, listen, happy Christmas to you, Linda.
Happy
I really
Christmas
mean that. Mind
to you.
Yourself.
Thank you so much, Ryan, for the phone call.
Not
you
at
made
all.
Me day, and I will speak to you soon.
I hope
God
so.
God bless.
I hope so. Mind yourself.
Happy
See you soon.
Christmas.
And to you and yours.
Bye.
Take care for now. It's 18 minutes to 10. I have the letters about the dads I want to get to, and I'll do that after this.
The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, to our Unplus competition, which continues apace. And this one is for people who have had varying relationships with their fathers. I'll begin with, I think they're all from daughters, as it turns out this morning. Yes, 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 all four of them are from daughters. So let's go to these. And this will take a minute or two, but bear with us, and I think you'll appreciate what they have to say. This one is to address to Sonny. Dear Sonny, I think of you every day. After all, I'm living in what was once your house, but I always think of you more deeply in the week leading up to Christmas. I think of you cremating several pounds of cocktail sausages on Christmas Eve for the enjoyment of the three generations who gathered in the front room to demolish them as they arrived. I think of you asking me if I had a new rig out for Christmas, or if I was all right for a few bob in December, and if I'd like to go for a spin to see the countryside once the holiday excitement had died down. I think of you walking our motley crew of greyhounds through the frosty fields on Sundays, leaving your boots outside the back kitchen door while you had your lunch in your going out the field socks. I think of your silent, anonymous donations every year to fellas a bit down on their luck, and to a refuge for battered women before the term domestic violence was even coined. I think of your laughter, your patience, your constant good humour, and most of all, your love for your family. You were a lovely man. I miss you. We all do. Love as ever, Dad. Miss Mac. Love. I love that in its simplicity, because it just remembers the dad. Here's another one, which says, Dear Dad, it's from Noreen. Dear Dad, we didn't get on. There's no sugarcoating it. We didn't fight as much. As such, we just didn't get on, did we? We eyed each other up from opposite corners of the ring and mumbled just enough to each other to get by. You were vibrant and healthy, active and interested into your mid-80s until the scourge that is Parkinson's disease swept in suddenly. I witnessed your scarily swift deterioration from walking to walker to wheelchair. Despite your best efforts, it transformed you into a twisted wraith, mute and totally dependent in a matter of a year or so. And yet as this happened, I witnessed a change in me. I felt every inch of your indignity like it was happening to me. I cried bitter, private tears, often leaving the nursing home. Over that short time, we forged an unspoken bond born of hand rubs, face stroking, wheelchair forays down the avenue, sneaking back home to eat ice cream and check that the grass was cut. buddies or partners in crime. Who would have thought? Dad, it was a privilege and an honour to walk those last few miles with you. And when you quietly slipped away last September, it was not the stuff of tragedy. It was the peaceful and timely end of a life well lived. I am so grateful to have had a second chance, and I will hold you in my heart. Love, Noreen. I'll go for another one. I've got a couple more, but I'm going to keep going because they're just of a theme. This is from Babby Tierney to her dad. Dear Dad, it's now 41 years and 8 months since you left us. It is 41 years and 10 months since I got married without you. Without you walking me up the aisle as you did my 3 sisters. I've never acknowledged my feelings. The aisle stuff is irrelevant. As the baby of the family growing up, you were my handsome, tall, kind Gregory Peck lookalike. And for many years, your health was compromised. Alcohol made life unpredictable. Many times, fearful for your safety. You fell often after a session. You came home talking rubbish to yourself and you slept it off. Your nature was always friendly. It was generous. It was open. You were never a rowdy drunk, just a shadow of the man you could have been. And for me, the ghost of you was hiding in plain sight all those years. I know now your tolerance for the stuff was very limited. It didn't take a lot to inebriate you, but one was never enough. A few times as a teenager, I was ashamed of you and angry. I'm so, so sorry, but there, I've said it. I wanted you to be different. You loved birds and dogs as I do. Goldfinches have a very special place in my heart. Their flashes of iridescence on the wing always brings you back. I have coaxing feeders for them especially. Your last years were painful, gaunt and withered. My mother ministered to your every need with great grace. Cancer had infiltrated all your organs, including your brain. In the regional hospital in Galway, I visited every evening after work. Do you remember? You were being force-fed. It was horrendous and inhumane. And then one evening in May, when nature was in bloom, I didn't visit. And that was the evening you died. Why? Did you know I wasn't coming? Did you feel free to go? I'm now 5 years older than you when you set off to meet Tommy Joe and your parents, Dada and Nano. Finally at peace is my prayer. Lots of love, Babby Tierney. P.S. You will get this letter magically. And I complete the quartet with one more because I'm getting a sense that these letters will resonate in all different ways for people. So let me just give you one more from Carol in Kildare. And it says, "Hey Dad, I was thinking about you dying again, and for some reason I remembered your hair. Despite a well-covered crown and black and white photos, I only ever remember you with hair that nestled below your ears. Brief but regular trips to the barber kept this band of hair trimmed like a well-maintained privet hedge bordering a domed courtyard. It was only after the Parkinson's had taken up residence that your hair changed colour from indistinct brown to unmistakable white. At first I thought this was due to the illness or the shed load of medication you were taking, but because it was playing havoc with your hands, you were no longer able to apply the Grecian 2000. I can't tell you what a surprise it was to learn you had been dyeing your hair for years because of your luminous trousers sported on and off the golf course and those tartan summer shorts exposing your knotted varicose veins to the world. I was under the impression that you were a man who didn't give a toss about his appearance. How wrong was I? Do you remember when you were in hospital and you'd asked me to bring in a small scissors to cut your hair? You would then get me to clip your eyebrows round your ears and under your nose. You asked me to cut your toenails, but that proved a step too far. I acquired industrial strength clippers for the job, but had to wait for Jackie's next visit from England for the actual cutting. It's like a scene from Father Ted. And when Jackie had the hard work done, I rubbed talcum powder on your feet and put on new cotton socks for you. You had a big, happy head on you that day. If Jackie had asked me for a kidney in exchange, I would have given it to her, but she settled for a coffee slice and a cup of tea in the cafeteria downstairs. My own hair grows now in winter tones, regardless of weather or time of year. I pay a professional to deal with it for me. So while there's no more Grecian 2000 for you, Dad, the rest of us plough on with all the living and dying still to be done. I miss you, Dad. With love, Carol." And that is just a selection of the beautiful, thought-out, kind letters from people around the country thinking of their dads and their families and this time of year. And we appreciate every single one of them. And thank you so much for that and for all of the letters coming into us in the last few days. Amazing the power of a song, isn't it? That's obviously Queen. But I played Dream a Little Dream earlier on, and Paul in Wexford got on to say, You just played that song, which is the song my beautiful wife Sarah passed away listening to in August 2002. She'd been diagnosed with leukemia that June. I think of her every day. I wonder what might have been had she lived. And so many things have happened since, including my marriage in 2015 to the woman who restored my belief in myself and in life. Thank you for playing the song. Happy Christmas to you all. Lovely message, Paul, and happy Christmas to you and your family. And another says, I'm standing in my office. The tears are streaming down my face listening to the letters, bringing back memories to all of us of our lovely parents who have passed. And you know something? Somebody saw me yesterday and said that they heard a letter and they immediately rang their other half to say, I'm not going to wait until you're sick or dead. I'm going to tell you now I love you. And I thought, if all the letters sparked that lovely moment of love, that's a beautiful thing. But we've been saying it for some time now. Don't wait to tell somebody they're special or amazing or brilliant. Don't. Could be the person who collects your wheelie bin on a Thursday morning. Or it could be the person who just does something nice. Or that nun who gives you the wink, you know. I mean, we heard about that too, didn't we? And they're lovely thoughts. We'll have one more letter for you after this. Alrighty, I think this might be our last letter of the whole competition today. So we'll be announcing a winner tomorrow, even though it feels wrong to be calling anyone a winner with all these beautiful letters. But let me just give you this one, which is addressed to Peter and Paul. Dear Peter and Paul, do you remember me? In 1970, I got married to the man of my dreams. In 1972, we discovered that we were in the family way. Life was wonderful. We were full of ambition, confidence, and entitlement. Throughout the pregnancy, all our plans stated when the baby arrives, never if. We were invincible. What could ever go wrong? And the night before our 7-month checkup, I felt a little unwell, blaming it on that second slice of rhubarb tart. And feeling cold, I put on my oldest worn dressing gown and a pair of well-worn knee-high red hockey stockings. An early night will sort everything. But it didn't. At 12:45 a.m. we found ourselves racing through every red light, heading for Bedford Row Hospital. Here, not one, but two little boys made a premature arrival. I just got a fleeting glimpse of you, so small, so wrinkled as you were rushed away to the Midwest Maternity Hospital to avail of an incubator in their intensive care unit. You weighed just 3.5 pounds each. Your dad watched over you as you lay side by side, just as you had for the last 7 months and 2 days. I never saw you again. Alone, back in a single room away from all the other new mums, a kindly nurse asked me what were your names so you could be baptised and registered. Peter and Paul, I replied with little thought or consultation. Two little dicky birds sitting on a wall, one named Peter, the other named Paul. Fly away, Peter. Fly away, Paul. And your daddy carried you down the graveyard in a small white coffin accompanied by your two granddads and the clergyman who had married us just 18 months before. We went home together, your daddy and I, just the two of us. The Moses basket had been spirited away into someone's attic and the carefully folded, looks-washed, newborn baby grows removed. And life continued just as it was, yet it was undeniably different. When was replaced by if, forever. I know where you were laid, but you were seldom mentioned in conversation. How I wished I could have wrapped you in a fluffy blue blanket, surrounded you with love and kisses, counted on your fingers and toes just as I did when your brother and three sisters arrived, one after the other, at 2-year intervals. I wonder, do you remember me as a glimpse of well-worn, knee-high, red hockey stockings? It has taken me 48 years to write this letter. Sent with love, Mum. Sometimes you don't need to comment on a letter, because you've just heard every word you need to. And that letter is for a lot of people who've been through the wars and come out the other side. We're going to leave that there for now. We'll go to the On Post competition tomorrow to say thank you to the person who won, and we'll do that in the morning. In the meantime, thank you to everybody for taking the time, the effort and the commitment to and the honesty to send in your beautiful missives. We've loved and appreciated every single one of them. Stay tuned for Sean O'Rourke. Have a great day. Mind yourselves. And I really mean that. And we'll see you tomorrow.
The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1.